Good afternoon. I'm very excited to be here to talk to you about disaster preparedness and response and chronic disease. The other speakers have actually set me up very well for what I'm going to talk to you about, and I'll try not to be too repetitive in some of the examples as all of us have been talking about Hurricane Katrina. So when I first started talking about this, several years ago, people started looking at me like chronic disease and disaster, that's sort of a contradiction. What are you talking about? As the years have progressed, people are starting to realize that this is a growing concern. The public health community has called for a call to action to address it. And then we're going to talk about how ChronAid has proposed both specific and generalized solutions. So I'd like to start just by talking to you about some questions. And I want you to think about these questions. I don't expect anybody to answer them. But as we go through this talk, I would like you to think about these questions and realize that this is a topic that will actually apply to you more personally than you probably think. So first, how many of you have one or more chronic medical issues that requires medication or equipment, such as high blood pressure, heart disease, diabetes, or asthma? The second question is, do you have a parent, a family, a sibling, a friend who live with chronic diseases? How many of you do you have enough medications at home to cover you for a day if you were to suddenly unable to obtain more? Or how about a week or a month? And then last, how many of you think you'd be prepared if the health infrastructure where you or your loved ones obtained your medications or equipment was suddenly disrupted? So we're going to talk more about this. I want to clarify some generalizations that I'm going to be making first. And the first is chronic disease is equal to older populations. And that's actually false. What we're seeing now is a dramatic rise in chronic disease in younger populations. And despite this, since it's more prevalent in older populations, we're going to generalize to older populations just for the purposes of the talk, but keeping in mind that this is more and more of a concern as our younger populations are affected by the same ailments. Second, we're going to use the United Nations definition of older people, which is 60 years and over, except for the U.S. data, a lot of it represents 65 and older. So, on to our discussion. So, people with chronic diseases are only now being identified and catered to as a vulnerable group. So, why is that? The reason is that older people only make up about 7% of our global population. Importantly, they are responsible, though, for 50% of the chronic disease mortality. In 2005, chronic diseases were the main cause of death in 6 out of 7 WHO regions, and this statistic does not even include the recent change in consideration of HIV as a chronic disease. So nonetheless, to date, there are still very few specific initiatives geared towards those with chronic disease, and even fewer specifically towards chronic disease and the supporting health infrastructure. So I won't talk too much about this. Everybody here has discussed Hurricane Katrina, mostly because it provided a glaring example that although we thought we were prepared and we knew the needs of those with chronic diseases, we didn't understand the magnitude of this problem. Of the 150,000 to 170,000 who actually stayed during the hurricane, most of these were special needs patients, elderly, chronically ill, hospitalized, or institutionalized. 5 out of 6 most commonly reported conditions from a study conducted by the CDC after the hurricane were for chronic conditions. And the majority of healthcare visits were for chronic conditions and medication refills. That's very enlightening. 71%, as others have talked about today, who died during that hurricane were over the age of 65. And then 47% were over the age of 77. This isn't unique to Hurricane Katrina. We all talk about Hurricane Katrina because it touches home, but we see this globally. We see this, we've seen it in the Kashmir earthquakes in 2005, Indian Ocean tsunami, and even more recently in Haiti. So quickly, discussion outline. We've sort of talked about the what's our problem. We've talked about the who does this affect? Now we're gonna talk about why. Why is this a problem and how can we address it? So why are we so concerned with chronic diseases now? What's different from before? And simply put, there's just been an increase in prevalence of disasters, both man-made and natural. Second, our global population is aging. With 500,000 people older now globally, and 1 billion projected into the year 2050, the International Federation of the Red Crescent Society predicts as a proportion of populations, older people will leap from that 7% that we were talking about to about 20% by the year 2050. In that same time frame, the expectation is the proportion of populations of children will go down, and then by the middle of the century, humanitarian organizations are likely to be assisting as many older people as children. Specifically in the U.S., in July 2003, we had nearly 40 million people aged over the age of 65. That's 12% of the population. That's drastically different than what we see in the global population. By the year 2030, there's an expectation that will be 71 million, and by 2050, in excess of 80 million. And that's as the baby boomers continue to increase this subgroup at a rate 3.5 times more rapidly than the total populations. The U.S. has ranked one of the top three countries in the world with the largest population of people aged 65 and older. And this is clearly demonstrated in the significant change in the population demographics since 1910 to the 2010. So with both increasing numbers of disasters and population aging acting in conjunction with one another, chronic diseases are at the forefront of our populations being affected by disasters and emergencies. So again, why is this important? So there's a direct relationship between age and chronic disease, as well as chronic disease and disability. You can see here, over the age of 65, 87% of the U.S. population is expected to have at least one chronic disease. So further, with disease and disability comes dependence on family, friends, health infrastructure, all to provide critical care such as prescription medications or durable medical equipment. As a result, when a disaster strikes, much of this infrastructure also can be destroyed, and it leaves a glaring gap in health maintenance, leading to acute exacerbation of chronic disease and life-threatening complications. As we talked about earlier, in 2005, chronic diseases were the main cause of death in 6 out of 7 regions. You can see here, Africa was the lone region that did not qualify in this same group. And this is a 2005 categorization where HIV, which is extremely prevalent in sub-Saharan Africa, was not considered a chronic disease. Now it's sort of bridging that gap between communicable disease and chronic disease because people with HIV are living longer, they require long-term medication. So this creates this double burden of disease in most developing countries in particular, which is the emergence of chronic disease when communicable infectious diseases have yet to be controlled. So beginning in the 1990s, public health community began to collectively realize that chronic diseases are becoming increasingly important in the global community. The result was a global refocus on risk factor prevention. Now, there are two critical pathways to reduce global impact of chronic disease, and one is avoidance and one's preparation. They're dependent on one another. While prevention strategies address avoidance of chronic disease, they're not sufficient to address their impact. Nor would efforts only to prepare for the effects of a disaster without trying to decrease their prevalence from the outset. So there's an important nuance also specific to chronic disease and disaster response in that preparing for chronic diseases is in fact preventative medicine. It's analogous to someone going to the emergency room for their primary health care or going to their primary health care doctor. And that has implications in terms of money that we're spending towards dealing with chronic disease and disasters as well. So to date, most countries worldwide have begun to develop preventative initiatives to address chronic disease and try and ease the burden of chronic diseases and global mortality rates, but few have yet to develop response initiatives to deal with this problem, and even fewer global initiatives. So what do we do now? This is a very oversimplified slide, but the point is to demonstrate the existing framework set up to provide the necessary aid. The focus is on medication and durable medical equipment procurement only on this slide. Globally, medicines and durable medical equipment are supplied by donations and pre-existing kits. Nationally, provided through the CDC's Strategic National Stockpile, as well as follow-on vendor managed inventory, meaning private care like CVS Corporation. Here we're going to focus on the pre-existing kits to demonstrate this existing gap in the growing needs of those with chronic disease and disaster response. So the Interagency Emergency Health Kit, it was first created several years ago. It's gone through several revisions. It's an example of the responses that we do. And as for nearly a quarter of a century, WHO has stated that the international public health community have used these prepackaged kits for distribution of medical supplies and emergency humanitarian assistance activities. Just briefly, they're comprised of two different components. So there's a basic healthcare unit and a supplementary unit. The basic unit is for first responders at a triage level of care. The supplementary unit is for healthcare professionals, at a higher level of care. The current IEHK is geared towards triage and infectious disease with additional supplements for higher levels of care, such as treatment of malaria, HIV, TB, there's a surgical supplement, et cetera. Importantly, though, the basic and supplementary unit include medications and durable medical equipment that can be used. However, they're not in sufficient amounts, and they're not specifically geared towards chronic disease. For example, oral corticosteroids are used in asthma and COPD or emphysema exacerbations. According to WHO's Global Strategy for Diagnosis, Management, and Prevention of Chronic Obstructive Pulmonary Disease, the recommended dose is 30 to 40 milligrams of prednisolone per day for a duration of 10 days. Without considering the need for a steroid taper after that course of treatment, the current amount of prednisolone included in the existing IEHK is sufficient to treat 2 to 3 people. So not until 2007 did WHO recognize the need to better address chronic conditions and disaster response and preparedness. The most recent update, however, published this year, concluded that it's too early to formulate interagency guidelines for most of the conditions at this point, and agencies were encouraged to experiment with models to manage chronic disease in emergency settings and to formulate experience-based recommendations for the 2014 review, another 4 years down the road. In keeping with the interagency health kit model, a novel initiative to create the SUCD, or Supplementary Unit for Chronic Disease, was proposed by ChronAid. This component of the kit would also be meant to meet the first primary healthcare needs of a displaced population without medical facilities, however specific to chronic disease. A number of the assumptions for the SUCD were modeled after those in creating the IEHK 2006, and it was a sort of a side-by-side adaptation. I'm going to skip through that quickly, but the purpose of this is specifically geared towards treating chronic diseases, and the most common chronic diseases, heart disease, pulmonary disease, renal disease, etc. Further, some of the other objectives of the SUCD was to provide reliable, standardized, affordable, and quickly available resources for disaster specific to chronic disease. Additional activities in the production of these units should include those listed, with emphasis on training programs for humanitarian workers to treat NCDs and use the SUCD effectively. So as I was saying, I was thanking our other presenters for setting me up for this, because basically what we've identified is that there are a lot of individual responses. We saw this in Hurricane Katrina. We see this in most disaster settings. It's not that there's not an interest in dealing with this. There's a lot of individual interest, there's a lot of individual effort, but there's no coordinated, organized effort, both domestically and globally. So another response that ChronAid has proposed is acting as an umbrella organization, and that's to organize individual empowerment and education, NGO and private sector response, and government response in the ways listed here. And the hope is to basically create this umbrella organization where people can go and say, I have an individual response for renal failure, for example. And the Renal Disaster Relief Task Force is exemplary in this. This is after Hurricane Katrina. They realized there was this glaring gap in treatment for people on dialysis. And they have created this international committee to try and organize that. The goal is to be able to have a clear guideline and recommendation for those with chronic diseases when the next disaster strikes, for example, for diabetics or people with heart conditions. So current priority needs, and to summarize, with all the information, population aging, direct relationship between age and chronic disease, rising prevalence of chronic disease, and the rising prevalence of chronic disease in younger populations, the question is, what are our current priority needs in disaster planning? As clearly evidenced, our priority needs are now expanding to include those with chronic diseases and cannot be overlooked or put off any longer. It's no longer enough to try to prevent chronic disease. We must also understand their prevalence at the same time and prepare for them when a disaster occurs. So as stated in the WHO handbook, the capacity to mobilize and deliver the right supplies in a timely and appropriate manner is critical to the mission in regards to emergency response. But the global community has not yet done this for chronic diseases. Medical kits, such as proposed by the SUCD to help provide essential medications and supplies to the disaster area quickly, efficiently, and reliably, as well as an organized and coordinated response, such as that proposed by ChronAid's multi-level response, are ideal. So I hope that I've piqued your interest a little bit today. The take-home message really is that we understand the risk. We're talking about the risk. And as everybody else has been saying today, we need to do something about the risk. And in order to do something, it has to be organized, reliable, and quickly able to be mobilized. Thank you very much for your attention and questions.
Okay, we have time for a question. Any question for Dr. Horn? Okay, well.
Right. Well, that's our argument, actually. Historically, disaster response has really been geared towards triage, trauma, and infectious disease. If you look at Haiti right now, for example, they have a massive cholera outbreak. My argument is really that exacerbations of chronic disease will occur before you see a lot of these infectious diseases set in, like cholera, malaria, things like that. So that's what we're working towards.
Thank you,
Dr. Horn.